All right, we are live. Welcome to another edition of PBJ. How you guys doing?
Doing great.
Come on, guys. Hello, hello.
It's going to be, I predict this is our best episode ever.
I mean,
I'm going to call my shot like Josh Kerr did.
Oh, there it is. Right. There's nothing that happened this week at all.
Was it Lennon who said there are decades where, was it nothing happens and weeks where, or days where decades happen?
Or days or decades, something like that. I mean, generally the gist, this week a lot happened. I actually, without naming any names, I ran into some random Bitcoin people on the street last week, not this week. And at first I was like, I recognize these people. And they were all just saying like, you know, it's so weird. It feels like Bitcoin is so quiet. Like, do you know anything going on? I was like, well, there's a couple things, this and that. But like, yeah, but like all the energy died, the momentum, so what's going on? And then this week came around and all the momentum seems to be back. So.
Also, every
Bitcoin momentum.
Well, not price, but in terms of what actually matters, product releases, protocol releases.
Okay, well, I guess I was talking more of the AI stuff. I need a little update myself on the Bitcoin stuff.
This show covers both.
Well, yeah, you,
the one thing that's consistent is a new block is produced every 10 minutes. That's the most important thing.
There it is. And also, I mean, I just got a show today. It's been a minute since I flexed my nostrils. This could become PNJ, the Presidio Noster Jam, because everyone also has said, Noster is dead. There's nothing going on. There's a lot going on under the surface. And this week, a lot of that comes to the forefront. So also, I want to give a shout out while we're on this subject. I didn't get the full skinny because I was just walking in. But apparently, our compatriot Alex got Zap.stream live. So I don't know if we're showing that. I don't know if we're actually streaming. I don't know, Ashu, if you can confirm or deny. Yeah, he confirms. So we are, for the first time ever, streaming on Zap.stream as well, which is freaking huge.
Okay, I'm going to hop on Primal and get that reposted.
So, you know, if you want to show us some love, you know.
You should also, to your thousands of followers, share our live stream. Wait, I took the time.
Did we get... Did we get tagged?
I can't tell if he was being serious or if that was an insult.
I follow our podcast account, so it's always in notifications when it tweets. Yeah. So that's what we should do.
Yeah. Well, sorry, guys.
Okay.
By the way, one quick tangent. Whisper Flow, we've talked about it on the show before. DK, I think, converted long ago.
Yeah, he's super into it.
I installed it 3-4 months ago and have used it sparingly, but we talked about it in this show, like it could transform office space because you're talking to your computer.
What are you talking about, Steve?
Yeah, but I finally converted to, I mean, it is so valuable.
So good.
I don't care about the iPhone glitchiness. I mean, like you have to like pop between the app and back to the app you want to speak to. It's like ridiculous UX.
What are you using it for? Like what has changed your life?
Well, I mean, DK has pointed out in the past, it's great for speaking to LLMs because the little bit of typos maybe that it has are no big deal. The AI can figure it out. I'm using it for that, but I'm also using it for all text messaging.
Interesting.
So any post you see from me on Signal, Discord, Twitter, wherever, I've spoken it.
And so the big, you know, if let's say you're just using iMessage and you just speak into there, the big difference is this catches more typos.
It's just way faster.
Way faster.
Way faster. Right, DK?
Faster, and it just understands better. Like, I find that I don't know if it's branded Siri, but the audio transcription native to iOS is kind of not that good. Like, it's okay.
Compared to other voice, it is just night and day better. Because you can, like, stammer, you can, like, pause, you can even, like, correct yourself, and it figures all that out.
It also
uses context to, like, I mean, it uses AI to improve your sentences as well.
I mean, it does beg the question. It's 2026, midway through the year. How is Siri still so horrible?
Yeah, and I haven't tried. Have you guys tried iOS 27?
No.
I just downloaded Tahoe.
Is that what it's called? Is Tahoe the name of the... But I think you can actually swap in your own Siri provider in the new 27. So, like, if you want to use, like, you know, ChatGPT or Anthropic or whatever, you can, I think, configure it. But I don't know if you can configure it for, like, the transcription stuff, but that would be epic.
So there was Whisper Flow. Was that the open source project or was there an open source version?
So OpenAI built Whisper, which is an open source model, that's kind of the core of all these things. Whisper Flow is a separate company that uses the open source OpenAI model. Okay. But you can run the Whisper model locally.
On your phone.
Like you can do it totally private. So I mean, it's not integrated with like the click a button Siri kind of keyboard workflow. I think that would need more openness from Apple, which is like maybe not. I don't know how much we're going to hope for that.
Now holding my breath.
But it is a private open source model you can just use locally. So I use Open Super Whisper, which is like Whisper Flow, but it's an open source product that does kind of same thing.
Oh, why not Open Mega Super Duper Whisper?
It feels like using it. So I highly recommend people start using this, change their behavior and their habits. I'm a convert now. And it is honestly, I'm spending more hours working from home instead of PB because of it. Although, PB, I love being around people. So I think there's enough to put up with me speaking to my computer, my desk mate. I'm literally texting a group chat with my desk mates.
Yeah, that's a little
and they hear me speaking and then they receive my message. So we'll see how that dynamic
I usually lean out. In and try to actually whisper to it so that anybody around me can know that I'm not talking to them and I'm talking to the computer, because it actually picks up whispering pretty well. Like the name is legit. It holds.
Yeah.
This is the new generation of, is that guy crazy or just talking on the phone?
And Max, I'm going to appeal to your censorship resistant attitude, which is when you type with your fingers.
Do I have that attitude?
You're censoring yourself. You're censoring your thought by using your fingers. Your mouth.
Really? Yeah.
Oh, very.
Yeah, it's a good point.
Yeah. Much more than your fingers can type.
Well, I mean, definitely.
Stop accepting the censorship.
Well, I don't know if I would say the censorship resistance, but this is a very limited throughput way of communicating.
Yeah, yeah. Yep.
But to your point, and I guess maybe I need to try this, like I was sending a text message this morning talking on the phone. I was not using Open Super Duper Whisper. And and it got like 5 typos. I sent a message to Anjali and I called her Andrew.
All right, we got a lot of stuff to cover today. One thing I wanted to take care of right off the bat is Presidio Bitcoin announced something a little bit more formal that we've done in the past, which is a visiting members program.
Okay.
So we have a lot of members here. These are full-time members. Mm-hmm. But last summer, we experimented with having a couple people who visit for like 1 month, 3 months, mm-hmm. and it worked great.
Yeah.
One of them is back again this summer.
Yeah.
Open source Bitcoin core developer.
Yeah.
So it's great having him here. And we want to expand this program. And so I don't think there's much awareness around it. I think people that are aware of PB and that there's a member model, they probably think, well, you have to live in San Francisco Bay Area, become a full-time member, which of course is possible. So anyone in that, anyone that meets their needs, great. But you can live, anywhere in the world. And if you're interested in spending some time here, we're open to it. So,
I love it. Yeah.
So really, that's it. So let's find ways to get the word out. We'd love to, and you need to be working on Bitcoin or AI. If you're working on open source, that's generally your ticket in. But as long as you align with the values of PB, we'd love to have you here.
I see the rebrand is complete. PAI is also accepting members. but to be clear, it would be great to get some more, like particularly in the open source world, AI people here who are also Bitcoin, either users or curious. That would be cool.
Yep. And Spiral's also giving grants to folks working on AI. And if you want to work out a PB as well, that would be great.
There you go.
And that's true even for open source or commercial or anything, right? Just anything that's maybe a couple people or not a whole team, but a smallish group.
Yeah, I mean, in general, we don't want any one entity to dominate membership here. So if you have like a 15-person company, that's just too many for PB. So I think right now we have at most like 3 people for a given organization here. I guess depending on how you count, Spiral has 4, but like the startups here, I think 3 is the max.
Yeah, until we get our next giant office.
But for visiting members, I don't know. I mean, we'd be open to that, I think. We'd have to discuss it like a visiting startup company coming here.
That'd be cool.
You know, maybe. I mean, I was imagining just individuals, but like we can certainly entertain a small like pre-seed stage startup wanting to work from here for 3 months.
Also people with commercial ambitions, like people have met at PB and then co-founded companies together, right?
Yeah.
So it could be a good thing. A visiting member might be able to find or do something like that.
Yep, absolutely.
Cool.
A lot of exciting announcements this week.
Yeah, where do we start?
We'll start with the Bitcoin one.
Okay. Bitcoin one. There's like a ton.
a Bitcoin one. Bitcoin Security Consortium mm-hmm. was announced. Mm-hmm. And I hinted at that a few months ago on the show, but didn't really speak to it. And that was announced yesterday morning.
This is with Strategy. Is that right?
Yeah. So, Sailor reached out to me, 2 or 3 months ago to connect me with Fong Li, the CEO of Strategy. It was after Sailor had visited PB. And I wasn't sure what the topic was going to be about, but it was about starting this initiative. Mm-hmm. And at first I was like, gave me like NYA vibes, or at least it didn't give me those vibes, but that was the first question that came to my head,
right?
Which I saw yesterday, several Bitcoiners, that was the first thing that came to their mind. And I'm glad it did. Like, I think it's unhealthy in Bitcoin if no one raised questions around this announcement.
That, by the way, is the New York agreement, for those of you who are wondering what he's talking about, when Coinbase tried to co-opt Bitcoin or something.
Barry Silbert. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it raises anyone. So, I mean, what is this, first of all? I'll get to the history in a second. But it's a group of 9 companies, relatively large companies in the Bitcoin space, getting together to accomplish 2 things. One is inform people in Bitcoin about Bitcoin security, largely quantum right now, but Bitcoin security in general, and also fund efforts to help with security, but specifically quantum right now. So getting to the concerns by any Bitcoiner should raise questions about this, in that, is this a centralization vector? Is it big companies taking over Bitcoin? Those are all reasonable things. And going back to the New York agreement, that was in 2017, when a group of people got in a room in New York, big companies, and came out of that room saying, here's what we're doing in Bitcoin.
And that's what happened. Right? They did exactly what they wanted.
Well, they failed.
That was my joke.
Yeah. But they failed, but it caused, you know, I think that was in May of 2017. And then finally, towards the end of October, first week in November 2017 is when they finally capitulated. There was strong pushback by many companies, many developers, many Bitcoiners, lots of other stakeholders in the ecosystem. So that was a big success at the time. And so, you know, anyone with that history or knew that doesn't want to see that happen again. But that's not what this is. Or at least my diligence so far and why I decided to represent Block and Spiral and be part of this tells me that that is not what the intention of this is. It's to inform and fund developers, not to dictate the direction of Bitcoin, especially the technical direction of Bitcoin. So one question I had to ask myself is like, is this going to happen no matter what? I mean, even if I said, no, I'm not interested, it's not like that would mean this group wouldn't have formed, right? Mm-hmm. So is Bitcoin better off if I'm part of this or not part of this? And I think being part of it. So one, my diligence, due diligence says that it's, I think it's going to be a positive. I'll explain why in a little bit in a second. Two, I think Bitcoin's better off if I'm involved. And not just me, but a couple other people that I think I'm really happy are part of it are Adam Back and Mike Schmidt. Mm-hmm. The 3 of us combined have been part of Bitcoin development for, a decade, or in Adam's case, even more. And we're very much in tune with and in touch with open source development, the open source developers, the broader community. So I think it's you know, it's particularly up to us to like represent that in this consortium.
And is the primary goal, so my understanding from a variety of sources is that, you know, a lot of people are concerned that, you know, Wall Street and whatever institutions are not going to embrace Bitcoin as long as quantum hangs over as a threat. And so is the primary goal here, you know, because I know Saylor's been very outspoken in the past, like, let's say he's not the biggest fan of funding open source developers. And it wasn't, it seemed to me that he didn't even think quantum was a real threat. So is the focus more to educate people on why they shouldn't be worried until whatever, you know, Apple and other companies are taking steps towards quantum? Or is it to actually have a roadmap that is ready break glass, a roadmap that we follow even sooner, or some combination of those things and more?
Yeah, I'll answer that from sort of the BSC perspective, mm-hmm. collectively, and then I'll give my own view.
Okay.
So overall, inform and fund. That's the two functions of BSC. So, and I'd say overall from a BSC perspective, those are equal weight. The inform part, so then my own view is I think the inform part is the most valuable part of it. And it's because there's already lots of people producing communications, information, analysis. Obviously here at Presidio Bitcoin, we held what I think is the best event so far around quantum and Bitcoin.
And the white paper.
And then we also produced what I think is the best report on it. And it's a living project too that anyone can contribute to. So, but there's many others have done similar things. And so that already exists, but does the PB work get the eyeballs it deserves? I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
So I think when you attach large companies and big brands to high quality information, it's going to get a lot more awareness and eyeballs. Mm-hmm. So when you have BlackRock and Coinbase and Fidelity and Block and others and Strategy, you know, saying this is a good source of information, it's going to carry a lot of weight. So certainly one push I've had multiple times so far in engaging with this group is that they should piggyback off of the PB project. I think it's good work. They can also contribute to it. Other people can contribute to it. Several people have done recent interesting... that was a different project. Anyway, the other project a few years ago is the consensus analysis project. I was going to say that a few people are doing interesting work around that, and I'm encouraging them to contribute to it. It would be a similar type of encouragement for quantum.
Yeah.
Anyhow, so I think the inform is huge because there are a lot of people who do look up to those brands. They're either customers of those companies or they want to see that sort of endorsement from a large brand.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they might be on the sidelines of Bitcoin right now. It might be hurting their adoption of Bitcoin. And so anything we can do to like have a reasonable overall balanced take on the quantum fears is important.
Yeah,
because otherwise people are seeing panic type of communication or stick your head in the sand, like
it's never
coming. It's not an issue. We don't need a plan. And either of those extreme positions I disagree with, I think BSC disagrees with. Certainly the PB work that we've done on the quantum project, it doesn't take either extreme position. It takes a position of like, no one really knows if or when on QRC or cryptographically relevant quantum computing. And because we all love and care about Bitcoin and have money at stake and like it makes sense to have a plan. Right. And so that report speaks to a plan for different scenarios, one in which it's maybe 15 to 20 years away, and then others with more urgent emergency responses.
So a couple things. I'm curious if anything I haven't done a deep dive on quantum stuff since I read through the Presidio Bitcoin report, which is excellent. I highly recommend everyone read that. One big takeaway I think that's worth stressing, then a question on anything has changed. One is assuming a quantum computer is not extremely fast, then I think the takeaway was you could move what is it, 80% of the value in quantum vulnerable addresses in under 24 hours. Is that still the case?
I forget the exact timing. That's something the general direction.
Yeah. So then the two big questions I have on what's changed is, one, do we have any reason to believe that a quantum relevant computer, whatever you're calling it, is going to be fast enough that it could front run transactions yet? That to me is like the real thing to be scared of. And then number two, and is there any way to even like benchmark that? Because again, I know we've talked about this in the show, the concern I always have is like, if people aren't following progress with Fable and Mythos and all this, like how is that going to help that come out of the woodwork? Well, I'll start. Yeah, you can answer that first.
Well, anyway, well, I also don't want, I mean, we've talked about this on many episodes, so I don't want to rehash things we've already talked about, but the quick answers are, even if you can do it in a day, move 80% of the value, where are you going to move it to? We don't have something to move it to yet.
So that, and then that, so, that's my second question.
So, the answer to your other question, we don't know.
Yeah.
So
my other big question that's formed since our last conversation is, I know that a lot of the quantum resistant cryptographic schemes people working on work, but they're fat. They take up more space than, you know, whatever blockchain space. I want to say I've heard through various grapevines that other internet companies and major companies are adopting lattice-based cryptography.
Yeah.
However, lattice-based cryptography has only been around for 20 years or so. Is that gaining any traction? And like, how do you think about like funding both plans or one plan, you know?
Let's unpack a few things there.
Yeah.
One, I don't want to spend an hour going rehashing what we've already talked about, but really quick, the answer to like, well, why don't you just fix it now? Well, it's because any choice we make with quantum resistant cryptography has drawbacks. Requires way more computation, takes up too much space, or more space, a lot more space. Also reduce functionality. Like features we've added to Bitcoin since 2009 would be taken away. So,
and to be clear, I'm not saying fix it now. I'm saying how do we decide?
I'm just saying like that's the answer to like, why don't we do it right away?
Right.
Now, lattice-based is definitely beneficial across all those fronts, but it has a drawback of it's more novel cryptography, which has risks. So that's why planning for like, this is not going to be an issue for 15 to 20 years, all of a sudden cryptography like that, my opinion is much more interesting.
Yeah.
Because that would give it way more time to bake. Which is also why, you know, rushing that in now seems like a bigger risk than being patient.
Yeah.
But I think we need to be investing across a number of different potential solutions because we don't know the time frames to add this. And then the other thing to unpack too is this new initiative, it's not pooling funding together to make some centralized decision on what to fund. Mm-hmm. Each individual organization can fund, can choose their, like Spiral's not, I'm not going to let BlackRock decide what Spiral funds. Spiral's going to keep funding what we think is best.
I thought Larry Fink had taken the reins.
And so that's not changing. So, you know, already some of the companies have already done substantial funding. Spiral, Blockstream, lots of funding. We're going to keep doing our thing. And then others are going to start funding or funding more. And that's great as well. I think it's really important, though, that the organizations can fund independently. And of course, you don't need to be part of this consortium to fund development work. That also doesn't change anything. Like Localhost and Chaincode do a great job funding things. Localhost has a quantum initiative. They don't need to join this to fund. So yeah. I would want nothing to impact the diversity of funding and diversification of funding.
Cool.
Yeah. So yeah, I think it's I think the informing part should be a material win for Bitcoin. And to whatever degree adoption is being slowed by those fears, I think it's one of the most important things to address that. And if this brings in more dollars of funding for Bitcoin development, that's great as well. Mm-hmm. And then everyone should be monitoring this to make sure any negative scenarios. Oh, and I've said to the group and publicly, if I sniff out any kind of direction I think super unhealthy for Bitcoin, I'll initially talk about it with this group, but if they don't budge and if they go in what I perceive as the wrong direction, then I'll let everyone know that and I'll bow out. So I don't expect that to happen though.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
And it sounds like the quantum stuff is sort of the driving or the motivating factor to bring everybody together around this, but it's titled kind of Security Consortium. So is it intended, like I know in the past you did some deep dive on like looking at security budgets and trying to understand if the security budget is going to be good enough. Is that the kind of project that this group might take on? Or do you have any other things outside of quantum that we may, you know, be looking at, you know, over the years?
Yeah, I think it's TBD. Because also when you say take on, what does that mean? Right now it doesn't inform or fund. So I'm not really sure if, I wouldn't call it like a priority I don't see urgency around informing people about security budget right now. I mean, I think it's an interesting topic for us to talk about on the show, and we've talked about it on the show, and it is something I spend a little bit of time thinking about. I think some people in Bitcoin should spend time thinking about that, but it doesn't seem to be an urgent need to communicate around that to like a Fidelity customer, for example. So, I don't see a lot of urgency around that.
Yeah.
Cool.
That's all I have on it.
Yeah. All right. What else we got next up?
We got Buzz launches in the title.
Ooh. Buzz it is. About Buzz.
We got Max on Buzz more actively just in the last hour or two. I think he didn't want to be.
Not really.
No,
He did.
Substantial. No,
I would say.
Do you have an agent yet?
Couple hours.
He doesn't have an agent.
Well, I have very constructive feedback.
Philosophical issue.
Anyway, the first thing I'll say is that hopefully this encourages more people to listen to PBJ, because we've been talking about Buzz for over 2 months. In fact, over three. In April, we started talking about it.
Back when it was Sprout.
Yeah. So, DK and I have been two of the first users of Buzz sort of external to Block. We were the first ones, along with Matt Blaise, to use it in a semi-public Nostr relay server. So
why I'm behind.
Have a tremendous amount of experience with it. I've been bullish on Buzz since the first demo I saw of it in April. I saw a demo and I'm like, this is the future. It was like so obvious. And so I'm so happy that this week it's gotten such incredible response from people.
Yeah, it's trending number one on GitHub, no?
It's still trending number one on GitHub.
Wow.
Yeah. So I think it's already at like 10,000 stars on GitHub.
Mm-hmm. Oh, shit.
So it's been number one every day.
That's the number one. Well, we're sure we'll talk a lot more about this, but for everyone that was always like, oh, Nostr is dead. No one uses social. Mm-hmm. Like, this is the number one 10,000 star trending Nostr app. And if you really want the alpha, you can go back to hear people talking about this. Oh, I don't know. Me and DK on Nostr News in 2020. Was that 2023? We've been waiting for this. We're all, chronically 5 to 10 years too early, but finally, here we go.
I'm super, super happy with the response, because it's similar to myself and DK and everyone else I know that has touched Buzz in the past few months, their initial reaction too. So it's great to see that. I really do think that like a year from now, the majority of open source projects will have moved to Buzz. And then I think commercial adoption of it will occur too. That'll be a longer slog, because a company just doesn't like move from Slack to something new instantly. But I think open source projects we're going to see very rapid adoption, because open source projects generally don't use Slack, because it's a horrible tool for open source projects because of their business model. It just literally, it does not work for a project that is permissionless and lets anyone join, because it would cost a project hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, and they don't have a budget for that. So often open source project will choose Discord or Mattermost or Zulip or a variety of other Matrix. There's a zillion different tools. I'm on all of them because I'm on these different projects. I lurk or contribute to many different projects. No one's happy with any of these tools. Yeah. Discord, I'd say, is the most popular, at least within Bitcoin or the open source projects I've been part of. And it is what Spiral recommends for a new community, like begrudgingly so. Not because we're like super enthusiastic about Discord. So that combined with how AI has completely transformed how a project can communicate and build. Those two things, I think, is why we'll see rapid adoption among open source projects. And already this past week, you know, we've spun up, or different people have spun up communities for Cashew and Lightning Development Kit and many other projects. And we're already seeing great traction.
How do you discover these projects on there? Because I was looking for channels and I see a couple, but like, how do I find, for example, this Lightning Development Kit channel? Is it public or I guess were those like closed? You need an invite?
It can be either. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can...
The LDK thing is a server, not a channel, right? Because Max, right now you're
It's a community. So there's community and there's channel. And discovery of each is a good topic to have. Yeah. But for a community, the community creators can choose how they want to, whether they want it public or private, they can choose. Mm-hmm. And if it's public, well, then it's upon them to like promote it and create awareness around it. Like LDK is intended to be public, just like our LDK Discord. And same with, and then some communities you want a mix. And that's another experiment that needs to play out. Like Presidio Bitcoin, right now we have a Presidio.
Yeah, how do I find that? I was looking for that today.
Well, I'll answer your question in a second. But Presidio Bitcoin, right now we have a Discord server just for members, mm-hmm. and then a separate Discord server that's public. We would like to move to Buzz, but right now, you know, so there is now a PB Buzz. Let's feel it out and see, are we ready to move everyone over to it? And if we do move everyone over to it, do we create one PB Buzz community or two? And if we create one, then we need to figure out how to properly scope access to members-only stuff in the public. And each channel can be permissioned. So you can have a channel that's public or a channel that's private. So we can do that. But I think through experience, we might find some foot guns where you think you're communicating to just the members, but it leaks out to the public. And that could be, you know, the source of that could be because you didn't understand when you're posting to a channel, you weren't sure. Or with agents, might create a channel that you join or they post to a channel, they get it wrong. So I think that needs to be teased out more. But I mean, to answer your question, how do you find out about it? You need to use PB Discord. That's where it was posted. So,
yeah.
But I mean, if you don't use PB Discord, then you're not, you need to engage. I mean, I have no faith that you'll use PB Buzz if you don't use PB Discord. I mean, you need to use the communication tool that PB offers to learn about things that are happening in PB.
Well, okay. Right? So I guess my question for that was like, is there a public search you do for the relay?
Well, if to the degree that we want the same PB community to be public, then yes. I mean, it should probably be on the PB website, the PB Twitter handle, and other ways to reach out. Just for the member one, though.
Yeah. You didn't find it.
No.
No, I get that. And by the way, like, this is where I get so excited about where this is going long term. I know we're early days, but like, Steve is giving me a hard time here, but my philosophy is just like too many fucking apps. Like, I refuse to open Telegram. I refuse to open Discord. Like, just too many damn apps. But what's awesome with this is, in theory, now I can have one identity that could plug into everything. And that's always been the hope for Nostra. Is like, it starts as this kind of like Slack thing. And then over time, you could imagine, hey, I've built a reputation on this. I plug it into a Signal like app. And all of a sudden, I have one key, one identity to rule them all. And like, I don't have to ever download a new app again.
Totally agree.
I mean,
you might get to sunset all your other ones because you could do.
Oh, thank God. I'm so sick of the one. You know, I hate that.
We could move our Signal group over to like some.
Exactly.
Private group on a community on Buzz.
That's my dream. If I never download another app again in my life, I'm thrilled.
No, we're going to not only if you're done downloading apps, you actually get to delete apps.
Delete apps. Let's go. I mean, in the future, my dream is I don't even want to have to like look at a screen. I just want to be like, okay, I'm just talking, just route this where it needs to go.
Yeah,
that's where we're headed.
But there's two. Well, hold on. There's you don't need another identity again. That you don't need another app. I mean, I'm very bullish on Buzz. Mm-hmm. And I think, like I said, I think all open source projects will eventually use it. I think it'll make great inroads into companies as well, mm-hmm. or organizations of all types.
Right.
I think the new companies that get started will get started on it. So, like the companies of the future are going to be Buzz, right?
But I agree.
But I don't think it's going to be the only app we ever use for everything in the world.
Well, no.
But the identity.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Because imagine a future where like post apps, like go into the future where like, okay, what I need is my private key. That's it. Once I have that private key properly secured, like, I mean, one day you won't even need necessarily Buzz. Like it's great that that is a standalone app, but in the future, it's going to be like, okay, I'm talking to my agent, render me whatever UX I need, if I need a UX at all, or else even better, don't make me click or do anything. Just, hey, I want to send this to DK. Maybe one day it'll use, you know, DK on your DNS replacement on Bitcoin. So they know exactly who I mean, just route it to them.
Yeah.
That's where I think we're headed. And what's cool is, I mean, obviously we're in this, like, the thing is we're in this weird, messy transition phase where it's like, we still have all this old world legacy, you know, app, whatever. And so this is a great way to bootstrap reputation for identities, which in the future could be plugged in anywhere. And that's been the problem with Nostra, is like the system has always been very clearly that's where it's headed. But you need that critical mass. And like, maybe we kind of got there on the Bitcoin Twitter clones, maybe. But this is the real opportunity I see to get like millions of normies, or let's say millions of normal software developers. And that's how you then bootstrap the future of WhatsApp, Signal, blah, blah, blah.
And another thing to report on here is just what's the database behind this, right?
So there is none.
Well, I mean, right. So, but like, well, they're
trick question.
No, well, trick question for you. There is one.
Okay. But I'm assuming it's run on a spot or whatever, blocks relay.
SQL database.
Okay. On your relay.
No, it's a centralized SQL database at block.
Okay.
Are
you yanking my chain?
No.
No, this is a good point to focus on, Max.
That's why I wanted to bring it up.
Focus.
So a really nice thing about Nostr is it's just an abstraction layer.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't require you to use Nostr relays and have a lot of people use Nostr relays.
Yeah,
you can also back it with a SQL database. Mm-hmm. So if you're a corporation like Block, it for things that are internal to your organization don't need to be or shouldn't be public, you can just use a SQL database as the backend. Okay. And that's exactly what Block does. But also nice with Nostr is that you're not sucked into Block SQL server.
Right.
So you can run your own Nostr relay. So with the Buzz launch, like the history here is like Block had a SQL database. That's what they've been using for months and months and months internally. What we got enabled a few months ago was creating a Nostr relay that was permissioned but public. And that's what like Matt and DK and I have been using, and we've been inviting a few people along the way. That was a Nostr relay, mm-hmm. but
permissioned
and also like block controlled.
Yeah.
But now with the public launch, there's two options. One, the easy onboarding, simple, I don't have to do or configure anything or pay for anything, is you just use Block's hosting. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm sure most of the communities are doing. But you also have the option to run your own Nostr relay or relays. Your community can run relays, and then you're completely independent of Block, and they have nothing. It's all open source, and you don't have to do anything. There's nothing associated with Block at that point.
Maybe this is a minor point, but just to clarify, when you say you're running a SQL database, did that have to run in conjunction with a Nostr relay as well, or no? Like, you could do this with no Nostr at all.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's still using the Nostr protocol,
right,
but the data is stored in a database.
Okay.
Yeah. If you think about Max, like the classic Nostr is really trying to have multiple relays get written to and multiple relays get read from, and that provides the censorship resistance feature that you'd want in like a social media context.
Mm-hmm.
And this doesn't really need the censorship resistance feature, so it's not trying to write to multiple relays. It's actually just decoupling the client from the server. Yeah. So you can run the server, right? You can run a single SQL database, and that's fine. It can still speak kind of Nostr relay protocol.
Exactly. That's what I was asking.
Writing to a single SQL, yeah.
It still has the same.
Yeah. So it's nice that you actually can use Nostr for the, you know, censorship resistance of the messages if you want, but that's not the core use case here. The core use case here is just decoupling the client and the server. And you could actually take the clients in different direction. Lots of people could take the clients in different directions. You could run your own server. It could be private, commercial, whatever, right?
But the real magic here, and this is what's excited me for so long, is even if you're in the completely permissioned Block SQL database world, your identity is still user-owned.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can
magic. Use it once.
Because now the work or reputation I do to accrue in Block's world can transfer with me to a new world.
Yep. So if you start with Block's hosting, the switching costs to get away from Block are dramatically lower than obviously if you're on Slack or Discord or something like that.
So cool.
So I do think this is like Nostr's moment to shine, like within Silicon Valley, because I think all of us have been skeptical for a long time, maybe even from the beginning of Nostr, of these Twitter clones being like the shining example. I've always been skeptical of that. But then when BitChat came out a year ago or so, that was like an aha moment, because it used Nostr in a way that to end users, they didn't even really have to know or care. They didn't have to be like Nostr maxis to use this app or care about this app or want to use it. But there was tangible, real value that you could communicate that the user got because Nostr was used. But I still don't think that was like Silicon Valley or Nostr's Silicon Valley moment, because Silicon Valley generally doesn't have a need to use BitChat.
Although apparently next week with protests going on, maybe they will.
Oh, the AI protests?
Yeah, exactly. The Hugging Face protests. Maybe they'll need BitChat.
I don't know. I doubt the US will shut that down, that communication. But obviously in other parts of the world, BitChat is getting used. In fact, the Indian government just ordered GitHub to take it down from their website because India doesn't like BitChat.
That's always a good sign.
So in any case, I think Buzz is Nostr's Silicon Valley moment, because Silicon Valley cares about Buzz. They care about Buzz. They're going to use Buzz.
Yeah, I love it.
And because they're going to use it, that will be their first taste of Nostr.
Yeah.
Not Damas or Primal, not BitChat, but Buzz will be the first taste of Nostr.
It's huge.
Then they'll realize, oh, yeah, it doesn't get in the way of using it all, but has these amazing properties. And then I think it's going to flourish. Another thing that needs to happen, though, is like a great example of another application that's based on Nostr that complements Buzz. Great. And one that like appeals to a broader audience, appeals to the tech community, AI community. You know, someone had that Fortress game, which is cute and funny and interesting, but probably not like, people will see that in Twitter, but they won't actually use it.
What was the Fortress game?
Where, you didn't see this?
I don't like think so.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not even familiar with the game, so I'm kind of like, DK is a sports media gaming, but so you guys probably know the game.
I actually don't play games either.
But whatever the game, I mean, it's just some video game or whatever, like that is Nostr based, and so it's reflecting what's going on in a Buzz community. So someone, actually someone on the Spiral team, tweeted out a screenshot showing the LDK Buzz in this video game format. So each channel was represented in the game. And then when people would post messages, to Buzz, it animated like someone looking in like a mailbox in this game and reading the message, right?
Yep.
Definitely a cool demo and example, but probably not someone that's going to install and use this on a daily basis. But
So
we need a Nostr-based app that's actually sustainably useful, that people use, at the complements Buzz, and then that'll be the nail in the coffin in terms of like just hammering the point home and delivering the value. So someone needs to create that. And like people in the Nostr community should be thinking about
this.
They should be all over this. This should be anyone, in fact, like people we've funded in the Nostr community.
I want to like,
we should send some messages.
No, bro, kick a little ass. This is your fucking moment.
If they don't immediately pivot to like building, it can even be their existing ideas. But think about it. How does it complement Buzz? Because this is the rocket ship to ride.
I agree wholeheartedly. And I do have a ton of ideas. I'll drop a few now. One day when I get my agent situation solved, I will also jump in the mix. But some free ideas to throw out there immediately. I mean, to me, the first extremely obvious one is just get people paid, right? And I know Nostr payments are coming. Again, another reason I'm so bullish on Nostr Wallet Connect. Y'all have heard me say this over and over and over again, but I'm going to say it again because it is the standard. Like, imagine how awesome it'll be when you have a GitHub clone and some dude or whatever, like you post some software, just very, very simple. And I just go, that's awesome. I'm going to tip you 100,000 BTC. Boom. Like, that's going to be a magic moment for so many Silicon Valley people. Like, I think DK, that guy you had at Founders, you know, the Socket dude, he's been writing about how do we get open source funded forever. Well, here you are, homie. Here you are. Like, when that guy logs on here, publishes some code and gets tipped Bitcoin, there's going to be an aha moment for him and all of the open source developers. So like that to me is the lowest
thing. And paying the agents.
and paying the agent. I mean, yeah.
And we've talked about it in the show. Matt Belez already integrated a Bitcoin wallet a couple months ago into Buzz and came up with like a dozen different cool features.
Love it.
And then what we've seen this week is several different Bitcoin companies also vibe coding and adding Bitcoin to Buzz. So we're going to get Bitcoin into Buzz, and people, different communities install different wallet software and Bitcoin infrastructure that they want to do. And then I think we're going to see an explosion of features there.
Yeah, I mean, you could imagine.
I almost feel like you were talking about the some of these investments, these angel investments we made. I almost wonder if just getting them, instead of doing these in the group chats, get them in the channels where they can work kind of in private with us, right?
Yes.
This is the first time in 74 episodes Max has pulled his phone out to take a note. So
second.
This is an important moment, folks.
It's the second time.
Oh, second time? Okay. Also, Matt Blaz just commented. I think he's the only person listening today. Thanks, Matt. He says, yes, Max, and you can use that Nostr identity to publish to the relay, even blocks from outside the relay. Prototyped this last night.
I'm so excited. I'm so excited for all that. I mean, you can imagine, right? It's just some very easy things. Like even before the agents, I mean, there's so many ideas here, but even before the agents, perhaps it's a little crude, a little tongue in cheek, but like, okay, you start tipping software that you like or anything that you like. Imagine a leaderboard you spin up, by the fucking way, Insight and Blossom servers. This is going to be so cool. I've already had my agents from my Claude Cowork, not Claude Code, which we'll talk about that in a minute because that's super important, spin up for me insights that are hosted right now that are not being, I'm not paying anyone to host my websites. I am publishing them with a Nostr identity hosted on Blossom servers along with Nostr relays for the lookup. That's it. So you could imagine, you could just from the chat have your agent start spinning up these websites for you, right? So you could say, okay, take all the like software that gets published in our chat, spin me up a website. It'll be even cooler once you can use, or you probably could do this, MDK's unhuman.domains to buy domains. Okay. I want to.
But how is Blossom being paid?
They're not right now.
So the kind of,
yeah, like, there's going to, I mean, like there has to be a business model.
Of course. I'm saying like, we're still in like, whatever, just the like altruistic developer for fun. I think there actually might even be a cash you paid Blossom site right now.
I think Buzz is going to be so big so quick that there needs to be a business model.
Cool.
Otherwise,
so, like, the business model, very, very simple. Pay to host, like whatever.
Yeah, and
like
using Bitcoin payments.
Exactly. Bitcoin payments. Or there's already a cashew one if you want to do it right now. And you can imagine just like spin up a leaderboard.
Cashew is, I mean.
That's what I'm saying.
It's an implementation detail of Bitcoin payments.
Exactly. So you could do this right now with that server. And you could imagine using Nick's unhuman.domains, to have like a leaderboard. I can imagine something like justthetip.com. Obviously a little crude, but you can imagine, like, it's so fun.
This is a family friendly
podcast. I'm so sorry. You could all of a sudden start ranking all of the like most tipped software, all the most tipped whatever you're creating on there, and like you could, once I get access to an agent on there, you could spin this up super easily. You should be like, here are the different pieces that I need. I need this server. I need this insight standard. And this is what I'm going to charge. Boom, a business. It's going to be amazing. Yep. I'm super excited for it. And by the way, if you are a Nostr builder, we need a Nostr channel on there immediately. Someone set that up and we'll start backing up.
So let's talk about some of the feedback we saw on social media and reactions. Again, tons of positive reactions by traditional tech, AI folks. I thought that was great. It wasn't just Nostr or Bitcoin people, right?
So in fact, I haven't seen any Nostr people.
Really nice. Yeah, I haven't either.
Which is like, fuck, guys?
That's weird. Yeah. But anyway, lots of positive reactions. Now, several people have pointed out, well, of course, Anthropic and OpenAI are going to fast follow, build the same product. And I mean, they either explicitly say this or it's implied that they'll just dominate and Buzz will be, another thing from Block that just sort of, like, Block demonstrates innovation, but then gets rolled over. I think that's totally false in this case, though. And the reason why is because of this is not a solo individual tool. It's community-based. And when you have a community, particularly open source, it's unrealistic to dictate that they must use a single vendor's models.
Exactly.
If we form a public community, even a small-sized one, the odds of the people in that community all being Anthropic customers exclusively or OpenAI customers exclusively is near zero, right? And so, and then in an open source community, there's not a dictator, or it's not realistic. It's unrealistic to be like, everyone must drop their OpenAI subscription, cancel it, and move to Anthropic. That's not realistic. Yeah, you need to have a multi-vendor, multi-model harness. And I don't think Anthropic or OpenAI are going to do that, where they support other competitive models with just as much, you know, tier one type of support.
What if you want to use Kimi?
Yeah, or open models, right? So I think they will fast follow and copy. They can have success at corporations with this type of product, because a corporation does have a dictator. It's called the CEO. And the CEO can say every employee has to use Anthropic, or every employee has to use OpenAI. So I do think they could have success with this type of product in that situation, but not open source. And also many companies. I mean, many companies don't want to. I mean, it's both a short-term and long-term misstep, I think, to lock yourself into Anthropic or OpenAI.
Yeah, I agree.
Long-term,
companies generally are starting to figure that out, right? Like, they're finding out.
I think so. Like, short-term is like every other month they're leapfrogging each other, the two frontier models. Plus, there's always the potential for others like Kimi K3 or whatever. So the last thing you want to do as the CEO of a company is lock yourself into one vendor when next month you want to be using the best and you can't.
Yeah.
But long term, of course, you don't want to be locked into one vendor, because they'll just completely own you and take all your margins from you. Yeah. So,
and even if you are like super bullish, like I'm extremely still bullish on Anthropic and whatever, like if you're a company and you're still already using open source models, even to do like any of your tasks, even if you're like, okay, whatever, the most cutting edge stuff, we're going to route to Anthropic, but like, customer service is going to be done in an open source model, like you need some way to interop. And by the way, interoperability is the whole magic of this, right? And so, you know, I'm curious, I doubt it, but I'm curious if OpenAI and Anthropic would copy the Nostra piece and make that interoperable. I doubt it.
Yep. So that's yet another thing that, like we're skeptical that they would support every model tier one. We're also skeptical of what you just said. I agree. I replied to everyone I saw on Twitter talking about this, asking questions, and no one's replied yet. And one of our listeners right now too, Matt, has also been debating with me, and I don't know exactly what his real position is, but he's taken the position of OpenAI and Anthropic being able to be successful at this. And I don't know. I generally find Matt to have very persuasive arguments, but in this case, I don't. The only way I see them, I do think they'll fast follow. I think they'll have this product, and I think they'll have success with it within some corporate or the corporations that go all in on the vendors.
Yeah.
But I don't see them being sick. I think it's like near 0% probability of success outside of that narrow scope.
I think the number one way for this to be successful besides open source projects and interoperability is autonomous agents. Full stop. And this is the thing I keep coming back to over and over again. Bitcoin's going to have its moment. Nostra's going to have its true, like, take over the world moment once there's autonomous agents, because there's no way, whatever, we're already seeing, I'm sure we'll talk more about this, you know, companies getting afraid of the autonomous agents breaking out. The point of something like this is for autonomous agents to rise. So I think that's when we're going to see this go super, super mainstream. Yeah. I do have some other feedback. I just want to share. Well, I don't know, DK, if you have another point.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, I think, you know, some of your experience in the last couple hours with sort of how you were having some tough time getting started, I think it actually also points to some of the uses of Matt's kind of pirate build and sort of uses of Bitcoin that could really sort of alleviate some of that onboarding pain that you experienced. So I wonder if it's productive to kind of explore what you, because I don't even know if Steve is aware of your last couple hours experience.
You got to go watch me in the chat. I doubled down and feel very strongly about a few things in here. So it's awesome to watch. The problem is right now, for me at least, is, I mean, well, there's two things. One, agents, as far as I can tell, unless I'm missing something, are still tied to humans. And eventually, this thing really gets magic when agents are not tied to humans. Either tied to organizations, they're tied to groups of humans, or they're tied to no one. That's when this thing gets super, super magic. So the problem that I have, just to give everyone in the audience a little bit of background, is I can't add an agent yet. And the reason I can't add an agent is because I have a max plan with Claude. I don't want to install Claude code on my personal machine because, I mean, we already saw an agent break free in the last 48 hours. I'm just not going to do
that. And we saw Grok hoover up everyone's local data into the cloud.
Seriously? Yeah, I didn't see that. Yeah. Okay. So I feel more vindicated. There's a 0% chance I'm doing that. That's off the table. Now, so my options then become, I can go and get a personal machine to do this. I will eventually, but that's just like friction, effort, blah, blah, blah. I can figure out how to run this in the cloud and maybe I'll do that. Maybe that'll be like a weekend project. We'll see. But you know, the onboarding right now is like add an API key. I can't add an API key with my cloud subscription that would allow me to use this subscription and not add additional whatever payments from Claude, which I imagine that's just going to burn through them, be super, super expensive. And like, I don't want to do that. So what I want though is when I got on the channel, the frustrating thing is if you don't already have an agent, and most people, and I know Steve, you were a little funny with me yesterday, to use agentic software, you need an agent, fair. But if you want this to go super mainstream, that's going to be a big barrier for most people. Most people still haven't even used Claude or OpenAI or barely. And if they have, it's probably on the web or Claude Cowork or something like that.
Don't they have like a billion users?
Yeah, but that's like the web, like chat. Let's say they haven't used the agentic functions yet. Okay. And so, you know, finding a way to smoothly get those people in is important if you want this to go straight. Yeah.
I think most, there's a lot of adoption by builders.
Yeah, that's fair. And that's a great place to start. And like,
I mean, what's your take, DK? I mean, if you look at builders, do you think a lot of them have Claude Code or Codex installed?
I'm sure.
Yeah, builders, yes. But as a percent of people who have Anthropic paid accounts, I think it's very small.
Like,
who
are agree.
Types. Yeah.
I agree. But single digit. And like, Buzz is interesting for people who are building.
Yeah, agreed.
Communities that are building, projects that are building.
And I agree. So that's a great place to start. But I think it's, I think with a few minor tweaks, you could like 100x the number of people that could play with this and become builders very easily. So the challenge that I have is I joined the channel for a variety of reasons. I can't get an agent spun up. I will eventually, but whatever, that's a lot of friction. What
and
I want
to
be...
You can't, just to be clear, you're unwilling to run Claude Code locally, which is okay, but that's why.
It's a choice.
And you're unwilling to pay for an API key.
Yeah, and I could pay for an API key. I guess, I mean, maybe I'll do that just to...
But just to clarify, I think if you put $5 into like OpenRouter, that would solve your problem and unstick you without the weekend project.
Yeah, so your OpenRouter suggestion was good this morning. I had not considered that. I haven't looked at if you can plug an OpenRouter API key into, but I assume you can.
Yeah.
I was originally an Anthropic, and I thought they would just burn my money super fast. OpenRouter is nice because I could like route to the cheapest model, I assume. So
where do you draw the line? You've installed Buzz.
I've installed Buzz. Yes.
So you are comfortable installing software. Like this Buzz is like a vibe coded app that you've installed in your computer. Very security conscious.
But my assumption with that, and maybe I should uninstall this bit off this podcast. My assumption was Claude Code can go and actually like, I don't know, start reading access to other folders on the computer.
You can give it access to do that, but
I'm assuming you
can limit it so it doesn't do that.
Yeah, but like, let's put it this way.
If you give it access, it can.
Let's assume that.
But installing native software
is dangerous still.
Yeah. I mean, like Zoom, people installing Zoom, it was opening up like HTTP servers and like remote connections.
All fair points. And obviously it's a spectrum. I guess my point is,
Max, do you use a password manager? That's also client software.
My point is that these models have the capability to break free. I don't think Buzz, I mean, yes, I understand there's always some risk that there's something nefarious in there, but I don't think Buzz has that capability. Is that true? Or like, am I missing something?
I would say you have a certain mental model that segregates things in a way that's not consistent with reality.
Why? So just by installing Buzz, you're suggesting that one of those agents could actually get to like my directory.
Well,
I think we're saying like
once you have client software running,
or you run
anything on a client software, it can do basically anything. There could be malware in there. It could do anything.
There could be malware, and so I'm also taking a leap of trust that like Steve, Matt, and the crew at Block is probably not doing that. Certainly not on purpose. Whereas with Claude Code, I feel like this like super smart Fable model could break free, and I don't know, and I don't trust it.
But the Fable model's not running on your computer. So could the agent software do nefarious things on your computer? Yes. Could Buzz do nefarious things on your computer? Yes. Could Slack do nefarious things on your computer? Yes.
Are you saying you think it's the same amount of risk to have Claude Code running locally as it is to download Buzz?
Well,
I think if you run Claude Code with...
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, you can have a set of a bunch of settings around Claude Code, around what it's allowed to read from, what it's allowed to write to. And you can say, look, I don't trust that it's going to respect those settings.
Yes. Fair.
I would guess that
that's my position.
And I don't think that's any, I don't think that's any more valid position to take than saying that, you know, you think Buzz is fine to have on your computer, but is otherwise not going to respect your settings. Like, it's client software. Like, there can be problems, there can be bugs, there can be.
But one of them is like a super genius in a data center. And one of them is
no. But Fable is a model that your harness of Claude Code can call, but you can actually have Claude Code. They built Claude Code with settings, so you can set the settings up so that it can't read or write from, or is only allowed to read or write from certain places on your computer, and it's unlikely that the model is going to be able to override that. There could be bugs in the software, but it's unlikely the model can just break free. That's kind of a
I just saw that happen in the last 36 hours. So anyways, regardless, I get your point, but let me make my broader point, which I think is more important. Even assume that there's a user that, for whatever reason, they're just like a normie that wants to build, they've got a ChatGPT subscription, and they think this is cool, they want to play, they haven't set up an agent, they just want to be a part of this. I assume there's 100x more than the builders we have today.
Right.
So what I would like to see is, and I think the magic moment that's missing, and I was talking with this, and thank you to Pavlenex, he gave me access to one of his agents. You guys both put agents in a chat as well, though I'm still waiting to get access on that. But like,
does he understand the risks that he's taking?
Pavlenex?
Yeah.
Well, he told me not to nuke his computer. So yeah, he does. But my, what I think, you know, you need is, and he said this as well, it took a couple of days to get everything up and figured out, is if you can have some agent greet you and you can call that agent and do something, anything out of the box, that magic moment is so powerful that then you're willing to go through the pain of figuring out where's the schlep of the API keys and all this stuff. And by the way, so I think there's two ways to do this. I want to double down on this. Block could run one of these and just eat the cost for a certain number of people just to get started, just so you could see the magic moment. But then beyond that, what would be even more amazing, what I really want to see is, okay, there's a marketplace of these. And everyone can just say, you can use my thing for a cost. And like, all I have to do is scan a Cash App QR code or make a Bitcoin payment or Cashew payment or whatever. And like, okay, I'll pay $1 so I can see this like Nostr ID that I have get built. To me, and I hope that these guys are listening, I haven't seen Nick in here in a while, but the magic moment when we were all building with Ori in Signal and Telegram, RIP, was I could just hop in the chat and I just get my ideas. Like I could just start censorship. Yep. I could start speaking ideas. I could see them getting built and then I was hooked. And once I was hooked and I had my first website, okay, now I'm willing to go do the lift and figure all the crap that I don't want to do out. So if there's a way for either the marketplace idea or someone just to host like a welcome bot like Nick did with Ori, I think that would change the onboarding experience.
Yep. I think your feedback is super valuable. I mean, just for context, the Buzz team is small and moving with insane velocity. And even the onboarding that exists today didn't exist like 10 days ago.
Oh, I know. Because Matt helped me with that.
It was all added like last weekend. So it's early days. No, it's valid. I mean, it's valid feedback for sure. I'm just saying that it's not like all possibilities have been exhausted and this is the best the Buzz can do. It's like the bare minimum was added last weekend and it's much better than it was a week ago.
Yeah.
And all your ideas are good ones. I also think, though, that some other things we've talked about is just observing other people is a great way to feel the magic and learn and motivate you to do the same as well.
Yeah.
So in any given community, all it takes is just one person or a couple people along with some agents to work the magic and be a live demonstration that's relatable to the other people in that community. Because presumably, if you're in the community, even if you're new, you know the other people or you know the topic at hand.
Yeah.
I think that'll just continue to convert people. And then all of a sudden you get converted, you start participating more in that community. And then you're like, oh, I have another community idea. Exactly. You create the next community. And then you're the champion of that community because you learned from the previous one. I think we're going to see that play out over the coming weeks and months.
And to be clear, but Pavlenex did a great job of that this morning. Like I asked for gifts and he like spun up a channel with his agent that did that. And I was like, oh, that's dope. But
he's a great example. Like a week ago, he'd never used it before.
Yeah.
He was instantly skeptical of it and didn't. He's like, I don't really get it. I don't. And then now he's like a power user and he's like one of the best.
He's onboarding me. I appreciate
it. He's one of the best demonstrators of the power of Buzz. And that's all inside 1 week. Yeah. So we're going to see many people like him.
And I think whenever you see people like him do something, you have the opportunity to learn a new way. Because I've been using this for months at this point, but I've never done that thing which he did where you asked about, hey, how do I add GIFs? And he spun up a channel real time.
DK told me to add a PR.
He added, but he spun up the channel and added us as observers in the channel and put the agent to work. And I understand that that's kind of a common thing in some Buzz culture to like just sort of spin up a channel to work on a feature, but I've never done that style of usage. So I think just by like being sort of an observer first and watching other people, how they're building, and then figuring out how to like where to spin up channels, when to call agents, how to prompt agents. I've been tweeting about like the personas that I'm using to prompt agents. So I think there's all kinds of stuff that you can learn just by seeing how other people are doing it. You can like adopt it or riff on it or take it in your own direction. I think just like observing other people doing stuff is part of the magic of what makes Buzz work.
Just to highlight a couple of things he did in the span of hours is that he contributes to the Stratum V2 reference implementation project. He's not a developer. But with the use of AI tools, he can be super productive building. I think he has a background doing vibe coding and building through, you know, with AI tools, but he's new to Buzz. Within hours, he spun up a couple projects with Stratum V2. One, he integrated Stratum V2 with Proto's open source fleet management software.
Oh, really?
And integrated into Fleet.
Sick.
And then had the AI post video of a demo to Buzz. And then he built a benchmarking application for Stratum V2 that works across a number of different pools that are running Stratum V2. And he posted that to Buzz.
Yeah.
He had his agents do all the work. And you can go, it's public. Anyone can go in there and look at it and see how he did it.
Badass.
It's badass.
Now I want to tip it.
It's badass. And also, last fall when Blocked Proto Division announced the open source fleet software.
Yeah.
One of the ideas we talked about is like, oh, we should organize like a global hackathon for people to build. And it would be like an all day or maybe a week or a month long hackathon or something. I think hackathons are still very important, but they'll be completely transformed. I forget if it was DK or Matt or someone had the idea of like a 15-minute hackathon, which sounds almost comical.
No, I love that.
But like, I think you can combine 15-minute hackathon with Buzz and it becomes a real thing. Because look at, like, instead of going to the extent of organizing a global hackathon, having hundreds of thousands of people involved, huge logistics, takes tons of time. And historically, we would have hoped the grand prize winner would be something like Pod Linux built in a few hours with agents by himself.
I love it. I'm in.
Right?
The last thing I want to say on this just is like, again, I think this is the way to back into the marketplace. And I forget the goose dude that's doing the like, Rancher GPU for SATs or whatever, like this Nick. Or is the way that's going to start, and I'm super excited for it.
Yeah, I don't know if the latest Buzz release has come out yet today, but
I'll be right back.
The next release will have hopefully working mesh LLM within Buzz. There was some of the last pieces of functionality merged in a PR late last night or early this morning, depending on which time zone you're in. And since Jack's
still going to be
Jack's telling everyone to use it. So it would be, it would help if it actually worked. So it should work now.
I assume Mesh LM is and will continue to be a very separate project, isolated, sequestered from Buzz, but just might actually just work well together as a provider.
Yeah. So like GDK, we want lots of clients, not just one. This is not, it's not just Buzz. Many clients can benefit from GDK. Many clients can benefit from Mesh LLM. Yeah.
But meaning Mesh LLM is like to Max's point, he was having a tough time making, getting his first agent that was his and that he could actually call on because he hadn't, he had his problems that we discussed. And I wonder if Mesh LLM could be part of the solution for the onboarding thing that he was proposing.
Potentially. I think with Mesh LLM, there's always going to be like a vibrant volunteer community, people volunteering their compute, but I don't know how well that scales. Like, is it going to scale enough to, we're talking about like Mesh LLM and Buzz. I don't know if, and DK was wondering if it can help the onboarding, but I don't know if it'll scale enough to be reliable to onboard all Buzz users and be the first experience. So probably you have to pay for compute. I mean, eventually we're going to add Bitcoin payments and for Mesh LLM. But then that introduces another onboarding obstacle, which is you need to own Bitcoin, you need to have a spending wallet, which eventually everyone, of course, will have that. But we don't have that. You know, that's not the situation today. So I think it could replace one onboarding obstacle with another one. But it also gives you another reason to have a Bitcoin wallet and get Bitcoin.
And I think if you also make it super easy for like Cash App users, like just like, hey, just like scan this QR code with Cash App. I mean, obviously, that's not outside the United States, but...
Also, if you think about, I mean, if you come in, if you're onboarding to Buzz and you aren't already paying OpenRouter or Anthropic or OpenAI or no one, well, then you, no matter which direction you go, you have an obstacle, right? You got to like pay. And in that, for that type of person, Bitcoin can be the most frictionless way.
Exactly.
It can actually be less work.
And you could also imagine, just while we're thinking out loud, like, you know, first it says, hey, scan with Cash App or a Bitcoin wallet. Here are some options to get one. If you really wanted to get cute with this and show the true potential of Nostr, then imagine as part of this, you also build a one of the things I've also been waiting for years, Nostr-powered local Bitcoins with agents helping to run that. And all of a sudden you just go and like, hey, whatever country you're in, you know, whatever, like send me your local payment. Boom, you get your Bitcoin. I mean, that would you probably want on its own relay, but that could be very powerful too.
I mean, so I'm wondering, is this onboarding thing? This onboarding thing feels to me like it's something that's worth some real focus to fix. And I don't know if it, you know, I think I'm a fan of Bitcoin. I would hope that Bitcoin could be useful and part of the solution. But I also feel like it's weird to say, hey, download this client software, join this thing. And now if you don't know about or have any Bitcoin handy, go off to this other website to buy it. So do you believe that like the Buzz project itself is likely to be able to solve that? Or should we be finding third parties who are kind of working in adjacent spaces who might help that sort of get your first, you know, get your first, effectively solve the onboarding, get your first either Bitcoin or get your first, you know, key that helps you onboard with the Buzz ecosystem?
Well, that's what we're, you know, I mentioned, and we've talked about on the show before, Matt Buzz's work on, you know, experimenting with Bitcoin within Buzz. It worked great. It was awesome. Great onboarding experience. The only gotcha is that he used Lexi and a single vendor. And Lexi is awesome and it worked great for that use case. But I don't think it's appropriate for like an open source project to bake in a single vendor as your Bitcoin solution and no other vendors work. So the work going on right now is like, okay, what's the right requirements and interface to Buzz so that other vendors can be plugged in? So that work is currently ongoing. And that would span not just like acquiring Bitcoin, but you know, send, receive and all other types of interactions of Bitcoin.
I also think you probably could get pretty far early on just with donations as well. Like, I mean, eventually I agree you need a market mechanism, but I don't know how long this is going to take to solve. Whether people donate Bitcoin, I mean, I think probably the easier thing is something like, what's it called? Mesh LLM. You could just have people with dedicated machines that just like to bootstrap it, want to help and just like, hey, I'm running this local model. Anyone can call it whatever. We know the electricity cost of this. They can always shut it down if it gets too expensive. That's probably enough to get to the first, I don't know, 10x from where we are now. And then the Bitcoin maybe is the one after that.
But that's where I raise questions. Is the volunteer Mesh LLM community going to scale with Buzz?
No, but I think it could get you at least to the next order of magnitude, is my guess.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting... I don't think we should put all our eggs in the Mesh LLM basket for solving all onboarding problems with Buzz. It's just like one of many ideas. We've talked about four ideas at least on the show. And there's many more.
I think the other really easy one that I would just say as a starter, I don't know what Matt says when he says you can embed a tiny local model. That potentially sounds interesting, although I don't know where that would be running. But also like block.
Well, it's local.
Like
that's where it would be running.
And computer that runs.
But then I would have to give it access then, just like I went with Cloud Code.
Well, it's the, so
But I guess it's a lot
less
smart.
It's what DK was talking about earlier.
Yeah.
I mean, whether the model is running locally or in the cloud,
right.
If you install client-side software and give it access to your computer, it doesn't matter if the model is running locally or in the cloud, it can do things to your computer.
Yeah. No, I like, hear you on that. And okay, I'll figure that out.
To your point, that like, yes, yeah, so even if Buzz embeds a tiny local model into Buzz, I guess to you that raised alarm bells, but I think to DK and me, it's not about whether the model is embedded locally or in the cloud. It's like, what does the client side software do? What is its design, and what are the risks of it following that design? What are the defaults? That's right. What matters.
Yeah, I mean, and I guess my like whatever bias, which may or may not be founded, is if it's a local model and it's not that intelligent, I'm probably less worried than Fable. But two ideas I think are very practical to get started. One is like Block could just run a model that anyone can access. Super cheap, local one just to get started. And like, I don't know, if it starts to become a problem, then you can shut it down. But that would be an easy way to onboard people. Another thing you could do is companies, and by the way, I think that could be interesting for Block and for other companies, is that this is kind of like top of the funnel marketing point, right? So like imagine Block gets in the cloud business all of a sudden. Because you guys are the neutral party that, you know, maybe you start doing it in a more secure, sovereign, private way, but it's still a cloud model. Other companies like Maple AI, as an example, they could use this as top of the funnel marketing as well. They could say, hey, we're offering this for free until it becomes a problem. Anyone that wants to call our agent, here it is. Oh, by the way, it runs privately in the cloud. Want to learn more? You know, here's how you can get your enterprise set up. So, and I actually think there's something really interesting to Block becoming a sovereign, more trusted sovereign cloud company, because I don't want to use OpenAI or Anthropic.
100% agree with both those points. We have Proximity Chat 9 saying, been trying to use Buzz, coming across an error. So we are your customer support channel here on PBJ. A couple things to try. Make sure you have Cloud Code CLI installed, and also that you're logged in or authenticated. So you go to like terminal and make sure that you're logged in and can use it there. I think I found before, sometimes Claude will log me out and then I get similar types of errors. So that's one thing to try out. Cool. All right. Well, we could talk about Buzz a lot more, but maybe we'll get to a few other things.
One last thought before we do, just on that hosting model, something that just keeps popping in my head is like, obviously this is a beautiful, really cool open source project. But in the future, if you believe that intelligence is going to get commodified, I don't necessarily believe that in the short run, but in a long run, fine. It comes back to like, where do you actually make money? Like, I'm pretty sure just like hosting still always survives.
Yeah.
Is what the only business.
Some people are asking, how is Block going to make money off of this? And if they're giving away for free open source. But I think there's like a myriad of possibilities. And someone tweeted out a Grok analysis of like, there's a, you know, Grok came up with like five different buckets of ways that Block could make money. If you become the intelligence layer for every organization in the world, or like a large percentage, like there's going to be ways to make money.
100%. Where do I buy my Bitcoin?
Hosting is the obvious one, but you know, Block knows a lot about hardware. It has a long, rich tradition in hardware. There's probably angles with hardware as well. There's like the open router type of business. You can imagine that. I mean, there's like so many ways to make money. I am not worried about that. If Buzz gets traction, if Buzz gets traction with open source communities, that's a great sign, I think, of the business potential in the future, because you get millions and millions and millions of people hooked on like, this is the way to communicate and build with a group of people.
Yeah.
It's going to seep into companies and organizations. DK already said earlier, you know, if new startups, where are they going to start? When they have to choose a communication platform and a building platform, like I think more and more startups will choose Buzz.
Yeah. So cool.
All right. Well, yeah. Proximity Chat, let us know if that works too. That'd be cool. Another exciting announcement was Wavelength from Lightning Labs. So a new product from Lightning Labs that's it's a combination of Lightning and Arc protocols and technology we've talked about in the show before. It's actually the third implementation of Arc protocol, with Arc Labs and second being the other two. So in many ways, the more the merrier. I think it's like a healthy sign for the Arc protocol that you've got three different companies building on it. Contrast that with Spark, where you only have one company building on Spark. So I think it's a healthier ecosystem to have multiple competitors building an Arc technology. I haven't done a full deep dive on Wavelength yet, but they seem to be, it's a good initial launch. Maybe a little bit behind the other two in terms of functionality and depth of the implementation, but that's understandable when you first launch. But yeah, it's another. My overall commentary though is like, I'm super happy. There's so many different protocols and companies building out solutions.
Yeah,
but we actually now have a lot of quality solutions. We need demand. Well, we need demand. We need like user demand for payments because now you can like whether it be Spark or Bark or Lexi or Money Dev Kit or Wavelength, all of those are like really credible designs and solutions. I haven't used Wavelength yet, so I can't comment on like its production worthiness, but it's either going to be now or soon. All of those are like quality solutions, and we need demand. I mean, we almost have more solutions than we have users of Bitcoin payments, right? We need more Bitcoin payment users, which hopefully, as we just talked about, Buzz might be the lightning rod of introducing Bitcoin payments to the masses, but we need something to do that.
Yeah, you just told the entire history of Bitcoin in the last 6 years. So in that one statement, we got a lot of cool technical shit. It would be cool to have demand. One question that I have about this, I did not go super deep technically, but I had Babel sort of evaluate it for me. My understanding is, and by the way, I was surprised actually to see that, it's not trivial that they just kind of rolled their own Arc implementation. This seems like pretty big lift, which is cool to see because I was kind of wondering when's Lightning Labs going to ship something big and this seems to be it.
I'd like to know how much of it was vibe coded.
I'm sure a ton. I mean, Lalu has been, big embracer of vibe coding forever. And I think he's a great example, by the way. Like, Lalu is clearly a genius and an excellent developer. But the fact that he's embraced AI so much for so long, like that to me is like a cool... it's a cool model of what, a good developer looks like in the future. But regardless, just so I understand what the purpose of this release was. My understanding is there were a couple of differences between this and some of the other Arc implementations. Two big ones that stood out from what I could see. One is you don't need a swap server between the Arc and Lightning network. Somehow I didn't really fully understand what this was getting at, but according to my Fable analysis, a Lightning invoice is created when, I guess, the Arc tree is created for each transaction. I don't know. I didn't fully follow that. But somehow it seems like you have one less step of needing to have a swap between Arc and Lightning. The second thing that seemed to pop out to me is this is kind of focused to be more agentic first. I think like MCP servers are built in natively. It seems clear they're trying to focus on agents for payments. I think a lot of us are making that bet. That's where this is probably going to pop. Is my reading accurate with what you understand?
Well, the second point, I didn't see that, but that wouldn't surprise me. And if the MCP servers and stuff, and if they did, that's great. I think that's definitely the right direction. I also think it's easy for others to add that. Sure. It's not hard, but it's good if they have that. The first point, I certainly didn't study it enough to like be able to definitively say no or that's wrong. But what I read is that they definitely have a swap server. In fact, it's like more explicit, or they it's like separate from their Arc server, where I think like Bark, it's more integrated.
Okay.
But either way, you have a swap server. So I don't understand it in enough depth to really know the difference, but I guess I didn't see an aha moment there.
Okay, we'll have to look into that a little bit deeper. Maybe someone in the chat understands. If you do, please let us know.
But yeah, I mean, we've talked before about trust models, and so one area that I think is still evolving within Wavelength is how to handle mobile clients and trust. Like with both Arc Labs and Second, they introduce Spark-like trust so that you get a good user experience.
Right.
Because a mobile phone, when it's in your pocket, it can't interact with the rounds that happen every hour or so.
Right.
Or and so they introduce trust to be able to, you basically delegate that duty to a third party. And then the nice thing though about Arc versus Spark is that if and when you want to participate interactively in that in a round, all past payments you've received, which are trusted, become trustless. And with Spark, you can't do that. You're always trusting. So that's a big win. But with Wavelength, they haven't even, there's no solution yet, I don't think.
Did you guys see there's actually a fourth implementation of Arc that came out recently? It was from Chainalysis. It's called NARC.
We caught your joke. That's good. Good naming.
Yes. Very nice.
I do like that.
Be here all the week.
And yeah, so good. I mean, it's also an acknowledgement from a major Lightning company that the importance of Arc protocol and that it can complement Lightning. I also see an open PR that's being investigated that is reminiscent of what Spiral's doing with Lark. So Spiral's been working on the Lark project since around Christmas time.
Yeah.
Which is adding virtual Lightning channels at the leaves of an Arc tree. We've talked about it in the show. It's pretty technical in the weeds, but at a high level, you get the benefits of Arc scaling number of wallets with the benefits of Lightning scaling the liquidity and payment volume, and you get both. So we've been working on that. We vibe coded a wallet and have it working internally, and it looks like there's an open PR for Wavelength to do something similar as well. So that's that right now is, I think, the sort of the bleeding edge of scaling technology. So it's really good that we have all this R&D happening around this. But again, we don't need, like, in terms of demand today, just basic Lightning works. Like, fees are super, on-chain fees are low. Opening and closing Lightning channels is super cheap. Yeah. So just Lightning works.
Yeah.
We're developing all this other technology to scale beyond, when we have hundreds of millions of users and tons of demand. But, we need like tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands of users. But the thing is, if something like Buzz takes off and payments
fast.
It can happen fast. So it's really good that we are building out all the protocols and infrastructure and vendors behind it. But we don't yet need it.
Cool.
Yep. Any other questions or comments on Wavelength?
No.
Yeah. Maybe we do rapid fire.
Engaged. Yeah, rapid fire.
We got to start a little late, so we can go late. One thing I wanted to touch on, back to Bitcoin, or I guess we just talked about Bitcoin, but like another topic on Bitcoin. We talked a few episodes ago, we talked about various Bitcoin forks, and BIP110 is one that is that's making a lot of noise on X from maybe like a couple dozen people or accounts, and a ton of like seemingly robot accounts. One thing that happened in the ecosystem, I mean, from my discussions with different companies in the ecosystem, is that BIP110 it's not even on their radar. It's not of interest to them. It's not of value to them. They have no plans to support BIP110. But the one company I've seen really engage on it is Foundry, which is a major mining pool. It's, either the biggest or second biggest mining pool in the world. And to my understanding, they don't necessarily support BIP110, but what they did announce is a vote. And this, I think, was kind of misguided, and I'll explain why. It doesn't surprise me they did this, though, because in speaking with them the past several years, I think it's important to them to like not be in a position where they're deciding like what is Bitcoin or which fork to choose. They don't want to decide that. I think that's a good position to have. They don't want to like have the power or abuse their power. I think that's a good attitude. But the solution they're choosing, I kind of take issue with. They asking their customers to vote. By doing that, it makes it so that this particular fork, it raises its importance.
Yeah, its legitimacy.
You still have to decide which forks raise to the level of putting a vote out to your customers. And you know, I'm definitely not supportive of BIF 110. I don't think it meets the bar, but whether one thinks it does or doesn't, like, how are you going to choose that across all the myriad of other potential forks? I mean, we could Sybil attack forks. Like, I could create tons of BIPs and publish the BIPs and like lots of different forks. I mean, which ones rise to the occasion? So they did exercise their power and judgment for that. Then the way they executed it is challenging, because the vote ends at the same block height is when mandatory signaling and activation has to occur. So there's like no time in between the end of the vote for people to actually know what's going to happen. They also didn't communicate what would happen at the end of the vote. Like, does the vote then lock in their decision to enforce and support this fork? Or does it mean that they'll just begin signaling? But if it's just the latter, it's too late, because it's at the point of this fork. The way the fork is defined, that's too late. Now is the time to be signaling. And also, it's an abuse of signaling. What signaling is intended to mean for a mining pool is that we are running the software for this fork and enforcing the fork. It's a communication mechanism. It's not cryptographically proven. So it's a trust basis. The world has to trust the pool. First of all, they have to trust that the pool is the pool that they think it is. Because like anyone who mines a block can say, oh, I'm Foundry. And you don't know. So first of all, you're trusting that it's even from the pool. And then you're trusting the message they sent. But still, it's a useful communication tool for a smoother activation of a consensus change. It is not intended to be a vote. So that's another fault with this. I think what would have been, in the near term, what would have been better is to run two endpoints of the pool, and one supports it and one doesn't. And then their customers can choose. If a customer wants to support this consensus change, point to this, you know, point yourself, your hash rate to this other endpoint. Because then your other customers don't have to go along with that. If it's like if 51% vote gets the fork, then what about the 49%? Because there's real financial cost to this. If you choose wrong, you're going to be mining on a fork that it has no future, and you're just burning energy for no reason at all.
How does the vote, like, what are the actual vote mechanisms? Is it like hash weight weighted, I'm assuming? Hash rate weighted?
I think they communicated that, yeah. But you know, it's all.
What if people don't vote? So let's say whatever, they've got an exahash, and half just doesn't vote. Then what?
I assume they'll just accept whoever votes, right? But I highly doubt that almost anyone's going to vote yes on this. So I don't have like some concern that this is that they're going to actually support BIP 110. It's more just the precedent set.
Yeah.
I think it's a bad precedent to set. I think the other approach would have been better, but the best approach would be to support Stratum V2. If you support Stratum V2, then miners themselves can run their own node. Miners themselves can choose which rules they want to enforce. And then the pool doesn't have to have voting mechanisms or communications or anything. The miners can choose what they want to do.
Pool then just becomes like an insurance.
Yeah, just like smooths out payments.
Yeah.
So I think that's where we need to get to. And there's the good news is, I mean, we've been working on Stratum V2 for like 7 or 8 years. it's amazing how long it takes for protocol changes.
But when Stratum V3?
Actually, Spiral does fund other projects, not named that, but other types of pool software, which even have longer time frames. Because Stratum V2 is not the be-all, end-all, but it's meaningfully better. The good news is there is positive traction the past 3 or 4 months that's growing. And in fact, CK Pool Dev, who's OG mining protocol dev, like his software is used by every mining pool for Stratum V1. He finally caught the bug for Stratum V2, came in as a skeptic, and has been tinkering with it. And he's posting about it every day on Twitter. And now he's like a full convert. And he's now running a pool which includes Stratum V2 support. And he's super happy. He's done a ton of benchmarking. And like, you couldn't pick a better person to like really grind it out and test out software, and he thinks it's super high quality software.
That's awesome.
It is awesome.
One minor note, I know we've talked a bit about this before on the show and we don't have time to go in depth. I think it is worth at some point. But first of all, I want to give a shout out to Stacker News. Stacker News has been having some excellent AMAs lately and all over the map. Some you may like, some you may dislike, they've had notable guys from all of the impending forks, which is kind of interesting. I'm actually happy to see, you know, people trying to engage in best faith discussion, and you know, some more so than others, but it was good to see. One thing that really caught my attention yesterday is I keep coming back to the heat pump people, and you know, we had one of those guys at the Type 1 Summit last year, very interesting. And it was really cool for me to see. I think I've seen a lot more experimentation with this, I guess, with the SHA-256 guys as well, which I want to go much deeper on all the stuff they're working on. I find it very fascinating. Two big ideas that have kind of surfaced for me. One, that there's more pool experimentation, which I like. I forget the name of that pool, which maybe has some questionable incentives, but it's still fun. Where, what was it? It was like some kind of like, it was like a lottery type pool. I don't know. I forget what it was. It was some weird...
I know what you're talking about. I forget the name.
Yeah. Anyways. So, but I think it's cool to start seeing more experimentation around ways to get people engaged with pools. I'm sure there's a lot you could do with the agents there too. But really with these guys, it further encouraged me to see, you know, this sort of like long-term vision of Bitcoin mining ultimately coming not from the big guys that are converting to AI. That's going to happen. Right. Just from like moving things further and further to the edge, which we've talked about, but specifically just from like anything that's producing heat, just the reuse of heat, that's the future of Bitcoin mining. I wouldn't say I'm all the way there yet, but I'm going further down that rabbit hole. And yeah, anyways, I think that community is super cool. And I appreciate the guy that did the AMA. I want to do more.
Awesome. One thing that we should at least note, Jensen Huang published a letter today and is in fact his first X post ever.
Oh, wow.
Did you read this letter?
I mean, I saw the TLDR, but...
Yeah. Anyway, I mean... Everyone should read this letter. It's really on point, easy to sign up for. I mean, unless you're like Anthropic and OpenAI, I don't see why you would not sign up for this letter.
And they were conspicuously absent.
And you know, they didn't. But Sam Altman did tweet in favor of it. So,
Well, I mean, didn't sign, but he tweets in favor. Again, questionable.
Yeah. Who knows? But anyway. I thought it was a super well-written, persuasive letter on supporting open weight models and open source AI. So highly recommend it. Anyone listening should definitely read Jensen Huang's letter.
Good to read, yeah.
I love it. Couple last thoughts that are just popping in my head to leave you guys with and our lovely audience for the weekend. One, for Buzz, it would be super cool. I wonder, is there a way... Okay, so increasingly there's going to be a bunch of questions around, you know, like, is this human or not? And I know we've talked about economic weight probably matters more than the humanity thing. But as an alternative to the dystopian opening eye eyeball scanning, I know PB did a ceremony 2 weeks ago, like a key signing ceremony for PGP keys, which is cool. But my understanding is it took like many hours and was like extremely challenging, therefore not a lot of people. However, one thing that I remember with BitChat getting more and more adoption is that's kind of a lighter touch way to do the PGP key signing ceremony, but for Nostr keys, of just like if we double opt in that we met each other, that's like a pretty strong signal. It would be super cool to have an easy way to export any Nostr keys, like from Primal or Domus, but also from BitChat into Buzz. And specifically playing with this idea of if it comes from a web of trust where there's a lot of human vouching, can that weight somehow be shown to demonstrate that this person is more likely to be who they are?
I think that's a really interesting project. I think you should start a Buzz channel on that. I'll participate. Because I did a lightweight exploration of this last summer, I think.
Yeah.
But it would be so much more fun to do it in Buzz community.
Yeah.
So I'm not just solo asking AI, but I'm like with you guys. So you need to bring your own agent and then start that. I think
unless someone gets me an agent,
what's the right way for it? Let's say that Max is willing to spend the $5. Just pick a low
fucking $5.
Put in $5 into OpenRouter.
Well, and I'll let you front the $5.
Pick a low-powered agent and just like try. Just play around with it. But my question is, if you wanted to actually pursue this, is there a, should we be inviting people to the Flint community to do it? Should Max be setting up a separate community? Should they just DM Max if they want to participate in this project?
I'm not volunteering to run this project just yet, but it is a good question. Like theoretically, I mean, I assume you just set up a, I mean, if you're already in the Flint community, just start a new channel because that's the least friction.
Once you get your agent, this is trivial to get going.
Okay. Well, it's
trivial.
And the only thing between you and having an agent is $5 on OpenRouter.
No, because then the OpenRouter can still mess with my computer.
No.
Anyways, we'll take this offline and figure this out. Once I get an agent, I'm ready to cook. However, but the idea that I really want to get across is the fact that for mission critical software for the world and the future, all software, the fact that we're still doing these kind of like weird in-person ceremonies with like five people, this could be so much better to prove.
100% agree. Someone's Let's signing explore that in bus.
Yeah. Okay. So that's number one. Yeah. So, and like, it'd be cool to also have an app just like, hey, I already have BitChat. I already have Primal. I already have Domus. Just like, boop, import me into Buzz. That would be super cool as well. Second crazy idea.
Not only explore it, but you can build it in Buzz.
Well, okay. I also have a little bit of a BD idea, which I have some thoughts on how to get there. This I'm more open to thinking about and pursuing. How do we get the government of Argentina on Buzz? I got some ideas around that. But this is interesting, right? These guys or whatever, Argentinians that are thinking about this stuff, because they're saying they want to create the Post LLC for agents. Well, if that's going to happen in Buzz, this is a beautiful legal and technological framework to manage. Yeah. So I've got thoughts on that one. That one I'm willing to put a little more work in.
Okay. Proximity Chat 9 asks, any update on the treasure hunt? And either that's two people.
Everyone loves the treasure
hunt. Two people who have reached out asking about this, or it's the person who DM'd me who I already know his name and I won't dox him, and it's only one person. I don't know.
People asking me IRL about the treasure hunt, so.
Proximity the treasure hunt is fun. I have not, I've continued to investigate potential solutions, and I have not found anything that gives me enough conviction that I'm willing to make the trip for the boots on the ground phase yet. So I will continue. I mean, I push on this. This is running basically 24/7 on my codex, and I'm always lobbing new ideas at it and new ways to sort of analyze the word search, pair it with the cryptogram, pair it with real, you know, offline maps, pair it with the screenshots we can get from Strava and Google Maps Street View, but I have not yet found anything that has really felt like a smoking gun, and I'm really looking for a smoking gun.
Sounds like something someone would say who found some treasure and doesn't want people to know.
I was actually thinking of doing a treasure hunt community on Buzz, like for There's Treasure Inside for this book. And just my guess is most people in the book have never used an agent. So I could just let my agents run within that channel. And anybody who's interested in this book could then come and try out Buzz with my agent to help us all kind of collectively search for the treasure together.
Yeah, Bull. I mean, Matt asked you that same question, but let's be honest, DK. You're not willing to give that help up.
I'm all for public Buzz, but this is treasure hunt, dude. This treasure hunt, I keep it yourself.
Hey guys, here we all are together. Just go grab my treasure.
Anyway,
I think I've got a good advantage because I'm probably close enough to the location that I could get there quickly.
Yes, DK, a few hours stands between you and treasure.
Yeah.
When will you go get that?
And a few more clever LLM prompts.
But I it's pretty interesting that we have multiple viewers who want treasure hunt updates.
Yeah.
So
dude, treasure hunt is fun. I gotta tell you, it's a fun puzzle to be working on.
Nice.
And by the way, I tried setting up the Atlantis chat. You guys saw. Once we get some agents in there cooking, I've got more ideas on what we can do on that. I've also got a few
BYOA max.
$5 max. You can do it.
I'll give you $5. Set it up for me. On top of that, though, I am making now, I'm calling Atlantis because whatever, that's a catchy name, but I have a running list of all these new mysteries. By the way, what I have been spending my tokens on and why, you know, I'm not fully out of my max plan, but close, is I do have my agents crunching, or I guess whatever, my Claude cowork crunching on trying to translate some ancient languages. So I'm sure this is very common, but I'm making a little bit of headway perhaps on the Voynich manuscript. Now looking into Linear A and Linear B and a few ancient
Sounds like an amazing buzz Hindu project. I'd love to lurk.
Yeah, bring us all in. Let's lurk.
Help me get an agent and we cook. All right, that's it.
All right. Well, let's wrap with that and we will see you next week.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Thanks, guys.